Welcome to Go Global Fast, where globalization and cultural awareness meet heart and soul. Come along and gain practical insights about how to deal with many cultures at once with sensitivity and grace. And here are the hosts of Go Global Fast, Dr. Tayera Kobayeva and Deborah Brown.
Welcome to the show, everybody. And I'm happy to say that it is a beautiful May day here in where I live, which is Phoenix, Arizona. Tayera, how's the weather where you are?
Oh, listen. Well, first of all, I cannot even imagine how the weather in Arizona could be good in May. Because in my Russian mind, who is used to much colder latitudes, it must be an oven. But, okay, if you feel it's good, then it's good for you. And it's much more appropriate to the Russian spirit here in Utah. It's about the freezing point, and we love it. What can I say? Cultures are different, and attitudes to climates are different, too.
That's true. And now let me ask you this. Is it a common occurrence in your culture of in Russia, or cultures that you know about around the world, to ask, how's the weather where you are? Is that an American thing as a way to start a conversation? Do you know what
actually,
I'm saying? Is that a kind of a bizarre?
No, not at all. In fact, you know what always cracks me up is that my father sends me text messages, and he usually declares to me or announces to me what the weather is there and asks me what the weather is here. And I say, listen, you're like a British lord. Can you talk about anything else but the weather? And, you know, and he doesn't do it for reasons of politeness. He actually does it for the reasons that he wants to know what the weather is. And it's very important to him because he grew up in an agricultural community and the weather is life, you see. So the conversation must be the same, but the reasons for such conversations could be different. In America,
okay, so
You go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I was going to say that, you know, when I ask how's the weather there, it's really just maybe a chance for me to collect my thoughts, or to be polite, or just start out, you know, something that is maybe non-threatening. Not that you and I are threatening to each other, but you know what I'm saying, just kind of an icebreaker. But for somebody that has a utilitarian purpose in mind, or the habit was born from a utilitarian purpose, it makes sense to me that it would be for a different reason.
Yes, and I would even, if I may, I would give it a different label. It's not even that he's asking me with utilitarian purpose in mind. I would say differently, he goes directly to the bone, straight to the bone of the matter, and we immediately start discussing very important things. Well, in his mind, that would be weather. So there are very emotionally direct cultures, and there are cultures that are emotionally indirect. In fact, each culture is a mixture of directness and indirectness. Like, for example, when Americans discuss business, they go straight to business. Now, in Russia or other Eurasian or Asian cultures for sure, don't even try to start with the business. You start with a different topic. That would not be weather. That would be family affairs, community affairs, and such like things. Well, but in American directness is expressed through weather. In other words, there is this transitional period of a conversation, let's say introductory period of the conversation, which would be weather in America, would be affairs of the world or family affairs in, let's say, Eurasian cultures. And so it's a mixture of directness and indirectness in every culture. It's fascinating to see it. And it's fascinating for me to tell you, and I hope you know it yourself, that America is not a direct culture, although it claims to be.
Well, here's what I know about if I've got a business call with someone and I need to get to the heart of the matter, or direct to the bone, as you say, your dad, you know, when he's talking to you, get direct to the bone. But when I need to get direct to the bone, I know that mentioning the weather and maybe sports can get me in and out of politeness quickly, and then get to the thing, you know? Like, let's get to it. Now, maybe that's just me. I don't know.
Oh, no,
though.
No.
I think it's not. I think it's American.
I think, Deborah, I cannot agree more with you. It is a very accurate observation. And let me rephrase it back to you. The observation says there are very accurately prescribed topics of small talk that are allowed in each culture. More than that, there is a very carefully prescribed amount of time that needs to be given to such quote-unquote human interactions as opposed to business interactions. Each culture has their own. That is exactly why, by what topics I discussed at the very beginning of the conversation, you can understand that the customer assistant was not trained in the United States. And this is exactly, I hope somebody is listening, because that's the business opportunity. That's exactly where customer assistants outsourced outside of the United States need to be trained, which topics and for how long they need to be discussed. It's almost like a dance. It's a very accurate amount of time. I even timed those topics in different countries and watched what's going on with different cultural conditioning going on. Am I making any sense?
Absolutely. And what I'm reminded of is how many times I have been on the phone with someone that I knew was in a different area of the country, and it was a customer service, customer assistance thing. They were here in America, and we absolutely, almost without fail, discussed the weather briefly first.
Absolutely.
And
yes. Uh-huh.
Yes, and it's a little rapport building. It's a little, I care enough about
yes.
you to ask you a question that's not business related, but I don't want to know, you know, how many children you have and whether they go to school and if anybody's, you know, having a bad day. I don't want to know all that. I'm just going to get in and out with the weather. So this is interesting
yes.
because you just said that we are not direct. So clearly, our prescribed time and topics for American culture in this little dance is not a function of directness or indirectness. It's something else. It's a, it's just something that, you know, that's prescribed, but it's not. It doesn't have to do with the directness and indirectness, which is different, right?
Yes, but let me revisit this point in a slightly different fashion. First of all, you say very, very accurately again, that it's almost invariable that the weather will be discussed. And remember the words you used. You used very American colored words, such so that you go quickly in and out. And let me give you an example. For a time being, I subscribed to a telephone company. Well, when telephone companies still existed, hopefully some of them still exist, to sign up for cheap international rates all over the world because I had to call to different countries. And the owners of the company were from Egypt, from Russia, and let me tell you, it was a totally different style of conversation, a totally different approach to the conversation. We immediately got out of the United States and immediately went into our cultural mode of operation. Very personal issues would be discussed, such as grades at the university, classes that need to be taken, and moreover, half of the conversation will be devoted to these issues, and only the second half of the conversation will be devoted to my business questions. Well, that would be unacceptable in the United States, absolutely out of the question. So, for example, when you get a customer service representative from India, she or he know that they cannot discuss personal topics. So as a result, they sound very often robotic because they're not trained in easy banter of American culture. That is the necessary ingredient of American business exchanges. And, yes, you're absolutely correct. It is only meagerly relates to the question of indirectness or directness and indirectness. But the fact remains, Americans think of themselves as very straightforward people, and in many, many, many areas they are not. And I would love to point it out if there is any curiosity in that respect. So how is that?
Absolutely. Well, I would love to stay on that topic, But I think it's interesting that last time we ended our conversation by saying that this time we would talk about how to adjust your style for global interaction. We were talking about language at that time, I believe, you know, language in particular, but now we're kind of talking about small talk, how do you get in and out of a conversation, directness and indirectness, and I think it does have great bearing on that question of how to adjust your style for global interaction. So if you could kind of, you know, be the one that keeps us in that frame, I think that would be a great conversation for today. So how do you want to talk about directness and indirectness and whether or not you find me direct or indirect? How's that?
Oh, wonderful topic. So let's discuss it. Well, first of all,
did I give you enough to think about there?
Oh, listen, you should see the kegs in my mind rustily moving, you know, in my mind that has not had lunch, therefore, you know, there is a little bit of rust inside of me. But nevertheless, I'll try to deliver and stay on the mark. So let's go back to what we were discussing. You're absolutely right. We were discussing the styles, because Americans tend to think that English is their language, and therefore American English is the English the world speaks. No, it is not correct. The world does not speak American English. It partially understands it, but very often it's wasted on them, and it should not be used. But there are other types, other aspects of style that also need to be taken into account. And what we are talking about is the type of small talk, the time of small talk is very, very, very different. You can speak English. Both sides would be speaking English, but the style will be very, very different. Let me tell you, the first questions Russians ask, almost the first question, I think it will be question number two or number three, how much money do you make in a month? That would be the favorite Russian question to an American, and I will always die with laughter when I see it because I'm thinking, oh, here we go again, the different style of the conversation, because the Russian thinks it's an absolutely appropriate question, and an American is embarrassed beyond belief because that's not the question that is being discussed. So again, the type of small conversations, the time of small conversations is a very, very important matter, and that is where it hinges on directness and indirectness. You can see Russians are very direct about the questions of money, but this is not where Americans would be as direct as Russians. They will not allow these questions to be discussed in vain, so to say, or they sometimes would be discussing it on talk shows, which absolutely blows Russians away because they think, wait a minute, how come you can declare it on TV, but you cannot talk about it in a personal conversation? And it's true. Americans, to us, outsiders, are very strange people. They will say more on TV shows than they will say to each other in a personal conversation. Now, we are different. We go about life differently. So that's the area of American indirectness. Another area of American indirectness is sharing personal problems. Remember you said that the first question that is asked in a conversation between a customer service representative and yourself is whether. Let me tell you what the first question that is always discussed when I'll take Russians as an example, but I can give out other examples as well, between people. It's how are you doing? How are you doing always requires the answer. Now, mind you, in the majority of cultures, it always requires the answer. Now, the answer might or might not be sincere, but in Russia it happens to be sincere, so both stop and discuss each other's woes for about 15 minutes. 15 minutes would be just fine. In other words, that's not a prohibited length of time. Each one of people involved in that conversation will be discussing how badly they feel, and they will even compete who is feeling worse. And that would be a very typical conversation. So what I'm saying again is there is the issue of money, the issue of health, the issue of personal life that is absolutely taboo, and therefore Americans will not discuss it, and therefore will not be forthcoming in discussing such things. And these three things would be absolutely acceptable in Russia. Now, Asia would be different depending upon the country, but personal issues are discussed, but very, very differently than they are discussed in Russia. So Russia is definitely half European, half Asian, and is an entity in its own right. America is its own entity, and let's say India does it differently than Japan does, but closer than, let's say, Russia and India or Russia and Japan. But Russians are farther from America, let's say, than Sweden. You see? So how is that for I'm afraid I'm taking you to this winding road of cultural analysis, which I don't want to do because it's too complicated, but we can keep it simple. So what comes to your mind?
Well, what comes to my mind is if a person in America asks another person in America, "How are you?" What they mean is, I'm going to be polite, and you've got like three choices of answer. One is fine. Another one might be, can't complain. And another one might be, I've been better, but I'll get over it. I mean, you know what I'm saying? We don't really mean, how are you, as in 15 minutes. That would just put you on edge. There's just no way. That's just not happening.
Can I say something?
I'm laughing because there's just no way. I mean, you know, now, believe me, I have friends that when I say, how are you, I mean, how are you? And I'm still going to get fine almost 99% of the time because it's just the way it is. That's what we say.
But you see, that's why we, I'm afraid to interrupt your train of thought, but I wanted to pitch in. There are articles written in other languages on how we foreigners get used to America. And let me give you my personal example. I come to the United States, my first year in the United States. I will be at the university, and I will be passing somebody by, and that somebody will ask me, "Hi, how are you doing?" And I will open my mouth, and I will prepare myself to give a very substantiated answer. And then the person will not be anywhere around me, and I will be looking for a person. I'm thinking, where's that person? They're already gone. I would be shocked, entirely shocked, by that very unfriendly, cold, selfish behavior of an American. And I would not understand, and I would be thinking, if you don't want to know anything about me, why are you asking? Well, later on I understood. It is not a question. It's a figure of speech. Keep marching. So I started experimenting. I would be giving all kinds of answers. For example, I would be saying, "Well, how are you doing?" And I would say, "Brazil." Or, "How are you doing?" And I would say, "Spring has come." "How are you doing?" "I'm not doing at all." Or something of that nature. And invariably, the answer would be from far away, "Great." And the person will keep going. And I would be amusing myself by putting all kinds of sentences, and I would know that nobody would listen to anything. And later on, I actually understood why. It's not because Americans are cold. It's because it's a monochronic culture. But we would be talking about monochronic somewhere in the future, hopefully, touch upon that subject. In other words, the relationship with time in America is very, very different from the relationship with time of a polychronic culture. And all the southern borders of the United States are inhabited by people with a polychronic attitude to time. And from there, everything else is actually springs. The length of time we spend on personal conversations, such like.
Well, amazing, because you're talking about it in terms of it being an attitude to time, I think, and I think that how are you is, and you said it was a almost like a conversational tick, you know, it's just a placeholder. It's just a, it's the thing that goes after hi. It's the thing that goes after hello. Hi, how are you? Hello, how are you? You know, it's not even a question. It's really not. It just comes out that way. But it's funny if you think about it. So, going back to the how do you adjust your style for global interaction, and talking about all those things that you were saying, I was taking notes and I was asking myself, how about directness in regards to feelings in a business interaction? In other words, do people from other cultures discuss their feelings about things, or do they keep it very business-like if they're in a business interaction?
You know what I would
say? Does anybody
talk
about their feelings?
Even if they don't, an American is very well advised to do so, but within reason. But you see, then there is this question of reason. And the question of reason is the reason is cultural sensitivity. You have to feel what you can or cannot say. And Americans are notoriously bad in that. Let me even backtrack and go back to the part of the phrase that you said, well, it's a placeholder. And I would like to say, well, too bad. Too bad. Don't you people feel a little bit lonely? Don't you feel a little bit separated from each other? Don't you want to make it a little bit warmer? Or are you okay with that? Because me, being from a collectivist culture, it's almost unbearable. I'm thinking, is this, it's like a, you know, Arctic Circle. Are you guys okay with that? So before I go, Beth, can I ask you that question? That very question that I always wanted to ask and never dared. Well, here I am.
You're asking me if I am okay with that, and we'll put the word coldness in quotation marks, because clearly I don't feel that it's cold. I feel that it is certainly offhand. You know, it is not a it's not a real question. So for me personally, I have to say, how are you? And then I say, and that's not my placeholder question. That's for real. How are you? I'm concerned about you. I haven't heard from you in a while. And you have to actually put that caveat on there. This is not the normal throwaway line. This is not my throwaway line. This is the real deal. And you have to actually spell it out. That's what I do. So when I do it, I say, how are you? And if the person says, fine, I say, okay, that's good. Now, how are you, really? I want to know. I am here for you. I am open to hearing, and my time is yours willingly, happily, and I am in service because I love you. That's it. And I love a lot of people. I mean, I love people. See what I'm saying? And I listen to a lot of people. People love to talk to me. That's why I'm a talk show host. So my point is, does that make sense to you? So there's the rest of the story that has to be told. You know, if I really want to know, then I make sure that person does not think that that's the throwaway line, how are you, that goes after the word hello. And you have to do it that way.
Okay,
so
well, then the question.
Do I need to know how everyone is in the world? No, I don't, I guess. So maybe that is cold. I don't need to know.
Actually, can I pitch in here a little bit? Well, first of all, my question to you that I would like to ask. No, let me start not with a question, but with a statement. You said that you love a lot of people. Now, if you were, let's say, Chinese, you would never say anything like that, ever, because it is customary not to love a lot of people. We do not even ask that question. Like, I'm citing now with collectivist cultures. We do not even ask that question. We do not even think about it. It's not the question that bothers us. For example, I live in Utah, where there are a lot of Mormon missionaries that come back from Germany, China, and we very often talk, and they say, in Germany, or let's say Russia, people don't even look at you. They are very cold to you. It is normal for them not to talk to you. They don't even pretend they love you. These are, they don't love you until you become their friend. If and when you become their friend, that's it. Loyalty is for life. And then you are theirs, and there is this bond that lasts for a lifetime. So you see, so Americans actually perceive Germans and Russians to be cold. We, Germans and Russians, we perceive Americans to be cold. So we are always wincing when we hear that phrase, love ya, and the telephone is slammed. In other words, it's like, you know, a phrase. So tell me then, going back to my question, and this is a very direct conversation. So if direct conversation when I, as a foreigner, am asking very direct questions that I never asked, I pretend that I understood, but I didn't. I didn't. Something, my cultural conditioning does not allow me to understand these things. So my question to you, are you then an exception, an exceptional American who actually does ask this question and means to ask that question to people, or all Americans are that way and we just don't understand you?
Well, I have to laugh because I feel like every American probably feels that they're exceptional. So I'm kidding. You know, that American exceptionalism that comes up every now and then in politics and around the world. Pretty funny, huh? So am I exceptional in that? I think not. I think, well, my worldview of my fellow Americans is that we are a loving people. I think we do love a lot of people. I don't know, maybe love means something different to other people, but I think Americans are loving and concern for humanity, concern for other people shows up in different ways. So this is going to sound really crass, but I have time and emotion to spend, and I will spend it very happily being upset and concerned for people I have never met, people I have never seen, people I will never meet and see. You know, I worry about people around the world not having enough water and you know, food. And I get emotional when I start trying to think about how can I help people that way. So, you know, cold and love do not fit in the same box for me. And I think that's how... I think many, many people I know, I think, are that way. That makes sense? Did I answer you? I'm not sure I did.
You know what? You are answering my question, and I would like to add one more twist to that question. And again, these are very direct questions that, let's say by we I mean Chinese, Indians, Russians, Germans, Italians, we do not ask you that question. We think it, and I know that we think it, and we checked it behind your backs because we discussed this. And now I'm being, let's say, collective representative, and I'm asking you. So first I would like to say that we, people from outside of the United States, we cannot quite grasp you Americans. First of all, this exceptionalism that each one of you was born to express their individuality is somewhat alien to us because we think differently. But let's put it aside. Let's set it aside for a second, this particular thread of the conversation, although it's a very interesting difference in how we look at the world. But we also noticed the feature of an American, let's say an American, that we ourselves do not have. You are, in our minds, and we have discussed it with many, many, many people from many, many, many different cultures, we do see that you are very caring in a very impersonal way. In other words, we Russians, let's say Russians, we cannot boast of that. We will care about our clan and clans at large, relatives, community, neighbors. It's true. That's where we will go 5, 10, 15 extra miles because that's an unwritten code. But we will not be impersonally caring because we don't know how to do it. Therefore, Americans are exceptional from our standpoint. We do consider you, behind your backs, very generous people, very, very generous people in a very impersonal way. But we cannot reconcile that image of an American with your personal relationships in your own environment. And we're very interested.
Well, you see what I see?
Yes. You go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, did you remember when I said I have a lot of time and compassion that I am willing to share with people not only in my own circle but around the world that I will never meet and never see? So what I'm saying to you, I think, is I will, you know, I only have so much time and so much of me to go around. I am a very emotional, not emotionalism, but, you know, my emotions and my level of caring and generosity, I think, are pretty high. And I will, it's almost like I have to, this is a very bizarre conversation. I'm can't believe we're being recorded, but, you know, I will parcel that out very generously all around the world, but I will definitely be selfish with that same time and generosity in terms of listening to somebody give me 15 minutes of woe is me, I can't figure out what to do, my liver spots are coming back on my right hand. You know, it's like a lot of times when people start to tell you how they are, it's really not very fun to hear, and you know full well that they're not doing what they need to do to get out of whatever situation they're in. I'll tell you why I'm saying this. I have a couple of friends that I have had long conversations into the night, hours and hours of just this woe is me, woe is me. And it's like, you know what? I am done with you. You are toxic to my happiness and my productivity and my positivity, because it's all about being bad and ugly and negative. Does that make sense? I get done with it.
What you say makes perfect sense. And what absolutely amazes me, that we are the polar opposites, not you and I, Deborah and I. We're representatives. Let's say you're a representative of America, American individualistic, which is a classic indicator of America, highly individualistic culture. And I will even explain what it means, because it's so interesting. Maybe the words do not express it accurately, but we are the collectivists. We are absolute opposite from you. We will not care about people impersonally at all. We don't think about them. We don't think about the water problem on the planet. None of it. And again, it's not Tahir personally, and it's not Deborah personally. It's actually we are right now we're stand-in for the types of culture. For the types of cultures. But this is a very valuable conversation, because you can see how polar opposite it actually is. But we will listen for hours and hours and hours on end. In fact, it's a necessary part of our lives to have these conversations into the night with a very ample amount of complaining going on both sides. And it is considered to be loving, you see? Caring about somebody in another country is not loving. It's not even on the radar screen. Isn't it amazing how different it is?
It is. Now, here's another example. My brother and his wife, Shelley, my brother Mark and his wife, Shelley, went to Missouri from Arkansas. So it was not like a 15-minute ride. It was several hours. And they put themselves into a hotel. After that tornado that destroyed, and I don't remember which town it is, but I mean absolutely wiped out the entire town. And they got into whatever vehicle they took that day, because they have more than one. It doesn't matter. I don't think they took their motorcycle, but they could have. And they went there because they needed to do that to help those people. They did not know anybody in Missouri. See what I'm saying? They also are foster parents and became foster parents of teenage children. And they're in their 50s, but they knew that this needed to happen so that a couple of, you know, maybe four or five people could have a happier later childhood, you know, teenage childhood. And I am so proud of my brother and his wife. I'm proud of my other brother and his wife, too, and all of my family, because there's that going on, you know. It's like, how do we reach out? So is it the case that I can say, how are you, and I don't really mean it, but I will do other things? And I have a list myself, which I'm not going to bore you with, of things that I have done for people. And I don't want any roses for it. I just know that that's what makes me happy. And I know that I am a loving person, and that's how I and my brothers show it. And we put it into action.
I would like to say something about that, because it's such an important subject that if we were to understand each other, will bring so much clarity to people outside of the United States, and hopefully some of them will be listening to it, but hopefully to Americans how they are viewed and how they are misunderstood and how important it is for us to understand each other correctly. First of all, what you say, this humanitarianism that your brother exhibited is an exceptional part and parcel of American national character. This is what was the, and I would like to underscore it one more time, the most impressive part of America I have seen, and it cannot stop surprise me. And let me tell you why. How many kids are being exported out of Russia every year with all these Russian loving sincerity and depth of feeling, which Russians have? How many children are being taken by American parents? They might not do an ideal job, but they get these kiddies in droves out of the United States. In China is a very closely knit culture where clan means everything. Philippines, same thing. Clan will always be there for you, will always support you. They will always supply you with money, with everything. But if you are without a clan, that's it. You're dead meat. You do not exist. If you're found in a shoebox, consider yourself dead. You see? So what I'm trying to say is a very, very important distinction where we really need to have the meeting of the mind between different types of cultures and really see what each one of us does well, and at the same time actually understand how to exchange that. So what I'm saying is, as far as American humanitarianism, where you don't even ask anybody's name but you help them, is an amazing feature of America. Amazing. And not everybody knows it. I think people need to know more about it, and those who are going to listen to it and speak other languages and are from collectivist cultures better listen to that, because, yes, I can testify to you very truthfully myself. I have seen it time and again, time and again, time and again, and that what actually captured my heart. That's how I fell in love with America, when I saw that. When I was able to go past this, how are you doing, and people passing you by, and when I saw this, I thought, no, this is something I can love. This is something I can give my heart to. So this is exceptional. Russians don't do it. Chinese don't do it. Indians don't do it. How many times I would ask my parents, I say, well, why wouldn't we adopt kids? I mean, look, these orphanages I work with in Russia or Ukraine, look, there are crowds of people there. And my mother, and I'm putting it all on the line here, she says, but this is not your blood. This is not your DNA. Why would you even tangle yourself with people like that? You see? So if it's not your blood, it doesn't exist. And for an American does not make that distinction. Do you see how different it actually is? But at the same time, when you go into personal relationships, that's where when people accepted you into your inner circle, they carry a very high level of obligations towards you. That's why they cannot love too many people. Because, for example, suppose somebody lost a job, and supposedly somebody needs money. It is unthinkable for a clan not to supply that person with money. It's unthinkable for the family to leave that person without money. It's out of the question. So it's only a limited number of people you can carry on like this. So therefore, you have very few close friends, and you only have relatives you care about. Do you see what I'm trying to say? In other words, it's a different way of about the world.
Very, very different. Yeah.
Yes.
I was going to say, it's very different. Now, go ahead.
Yes, you go ahead. Let me then say one more phrase, and I'll give the floor to you. What I'm saying is, if businessmen only understood, if politicians only understood what a fundamental difference ideologically it actually is and how much it is expressed in business. And I would love to give examples, but nevertheless, if it's interesting to you, I will give them to you. But nevertheless, you wanted to say something.
Well, I was just going to give you another example of what I personally am willing to do, and others that I know have done the same program, for others in the case of an emergency, as an example. My husband and I learned how to be emergency response. I mean, we were trained to be emergency response, first responders. If the first responders, like fire people and police, are not available in a natural disaster or a man-made disaster of some kind, we are actually trained. We have a helmet. We have a vest. It's just funny because it's been a while since we've had it all out. But we know how to, if somebody's going into shock, we know what to do. We know how to create an airway so that, you know, keep somebody's head back. We know all about first aid. And we did that because it is better to be able to take yourself out of the equation as a problem and help other people. And the other thing that I know that I could do, if a building fell down and you and I were in it, I know that I can do some things to help us get out of a fallen building. And I would get you out. And I would get out your daughter, and I would get out all the people I could. And I am 58 years old, and I, by God, would get us out. Now, how do you like that?
You know, I'm listening to you, and it's difficult for me not to cry because it is exactly what you are saying that endeared me to America. I just cannot repeat it more times, but I have to, that endeared me to America. And let me give you an example. Here's Russia. Earthquake. People are dying. People are standing in a circle. And they're crying and moaning and pulling their hair out. And my Americanness, when I see it, I get infuriated. I say, enough of whining. Enough of pity. Please save these people. Let's do something about it. But
right.
When I come to America, the opposite part of me jumps up and says, will anybody listen? Will anybody listen? People cannot suffer alone with their personal problems. This is hard. Can they please go to somebody and talk about it and not pay money for that? Because we laugh. And again, this is an outside perspective. We outsiders laugh at Americans. They say, they don't have any friends. Who do they go to? They are shrinks. Well, it's because they don't have any friends. You see? So, and at the same time, they will listen to you, and this action-oriented American will actually do something about many, many, many things. And that's why I'm telling you globalization is a universal order that is happening today, because it's high time we get to know each other, and it's high time we learn how to see each other's viewpoints and come to a and get this, as you said, cocktail, this potion, globalized potion, which will make invincible people out of us. Because I can see how America rubbed off on me. When I go to Ukraine and I see open manholes, I cannot stand it. I'm thinking, somebody has to sue somebody here. I mean, what is this? Somebody can fall. You don't even have an orange sign by it. And so somebody would easily fall, and people do, and people die, and nobody cares. And everybody
wow.
says, oh, this is how the world is.
Now, you,
well,
you know what I would do, Kyra?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you go ahead. Uh-huh.
I would stand there and absolutely guard to make sure nobody fell in. I would not be able to tolerate it. I could not tolerate that. I'm sorry. I would go, and I would figure out a way to put a cover on it. I cannot even tell you how unacceptable that would be to me. That would just not even be close enough to okay. No. No open ditches, no sinkholes without, you know, guardrails, nothing. No, sorry, not happening. See, it's just interesting. So, and let's go back to that part about no friends. A lot of people in America would agree with me, I would imagine, that if you can count on one hand, you know, that you have five friends, that's good. Maybe one is good. And I'm not sure why that is, because my experience is I have friends that I haven't seen for as many as 10 and 20 years. And if I get the good fortune to either get on the phone with them or, you know, choose to do that, if I stop being so damn busy, excuse my language, and or if I go to see them, these particular people I'm thinking of, and there's several of them, it's like no time has passed, and we are still the same friends we were when time and circumstances took us apart. And I think that I am maybe lucky, you know, in that I can say I have many, many, many friends, not just five, many. People I can count on, you know, if something really, really bad happens, but I also know that I don't ask for help. So, I don't know. It's a very interesting thing being an American, I'll tell you. But that thing about we don't have friends, when you said we don't have friends, my antenna went up a little bit. It's like, what? What are some of us do?
But I'm disclosing to you what discussions, please understand, I'm wearing two hats here.
I know.
For the sake of our conversation, I'm representing the outside, the world, looking into the United States, and I'm trying to have a balanced view. So I'm telling you, these discussions we have. Now, I guessed, and more than that, you should see how many times when I land, let's say, in Italy, or when I land in France, by the way, and when I land in Poland, or when I land in Germany, or when I land in Finland, when I was in my political capacity, how many times I would be asked these very questions. Do they have friends? Now, since I'm also an American, I would like to tell you, going back to that open manhole, I can tell you, I was laughing because that's exactly what happened to me. My Americanness just couldn't stand it. I was actually, that's exactly what happened. I decided to stand there and guard it. And my mom was so mad at me because she said, you're a crazy American. That's why we consider you guys crazy. And I thought you would never become that crazy. And you did become crazy. And I yelled back at her and I said, yes, I became that crazy. And yes, I am an American. And so the whole neighborhood was laughing because it was, from their standpoint, a very stupid exchange between a daughter who lost her way in America and a reasonable mother who is trying to drag her daughter away from that open manhole. So you can see, Americanism is very contagious.
That is so funny. That is so funny. But isn't that a very interesting symbol, you know, in my mind? Now I see this open manhole cover as an opportunity, as almost a test, you know, as a cultural test. You know, what will you do about that? You know, what would you do about that? What would you think? How would you feel? You know, and if there were children around, you know, what would you say? You know, of course, you know, whatever you say is what you say, but my gosh, I would not be able to tolerate it. I cannot tolerate it.
It's an American, yes, you go ahead, I'm sorry. I
was just going to say, not for 5 seconds, yeah.
And you see, that's how I passed the test of being an American, and that's how I understood that I'm irreparably damaged, according to my mother. The whole neighborhood was just dying because everybody, as it is normal in collectivist cultures, everybody knows everybody. Everybody knows that the daughter came to visit her mother, and everybody knew that the daughter lived in America, and so everybody wanted to see this family cultural clash happening right in front of them. And my mom did not keep her voice down. She was yelling, so the whole neighborhood knew what was happening. So anyways, but going back to this question of friendship, this is a very, very important intercultural discussion that I would love to have either today, and hopefully we will touch upon it today, because it also goes into the style of how you relate to other cultures and what you do. The concept of friendship is a very important concept because it's defined differently in different cultures. And what you said about having few friends, few close friends, is actually very true of, it seems to me, of true friendship. And true friendship is where you can really, really, really rely on the people. But here's the difference, and I think it's a very important difference. In American culture, when you have close friends, you do try not to ask. Why? Because you're trying to resolve the issue with your own hands, with taking care of the issue yourself. In a collectivist culture, when you have very close friends, you actually do unload on them more than you do in the United States, even with similar closeness of friendship. because there, in collectivist societies, systems usually do not work as well, you see, because their clans are the system. Here in the United States, people are actually very civil-oriented, and we already discussed it today. People try to create systems to solve problems, and this is the most admirable part of America. The other day, let me give you an example. I'm sorry to stay on that topic, but it's such an important topic. I started analyzing how I, a person who was not born in America, choosing a doctor, a financial advisor, I ask around, and if somebody gives me a personal recommendation, I choose that person and invariably make a mistake. Because in America, you should be choosing people differently. You should be choosing people based on different kinds of recommendations, on professional recommendations. But in my collectivist mind, I'm unable to make that switch. Personal recommendation makes everything to me, and professional recommendation means nothing to me. And this is a very, very important difference. For example, if you're an American businessman and you're not personally recommended, and majority of cultures in the world are rank much higher collectivists than Americans, than American society, you are dead meat. You need a personal recommendation. Professional recommendation will not work. Your resume will not work. Nobody would even look at it. And exact opposite is true for America. Your professional recommendation, your professional materials will do the job for you, not so in collectivist cultures. How is that for a difference in style, how you do business in different countries, and how Americans are perceived or dealing with another reality when they go into a different culture?
Well, it just brings up once again how important it is for you and I to be doing this work, because just understanding which resume or which recommendation, personal or professional, makes a difference in whichever kind of interaction you have, just understanding that is invaluable. You could be off on the wrong foot, so to speak, and not realize it just by that one little, like you, if you take a personal recommendation from someone who happens to like their doctor because he's cute, and you find out that that was actually the reason that that person did that, and you go in there and this guy is, you know, cute, but, you know, has absolutely no bedside manner, you know, for you, then you've got the wrong doctor. You know, so you need to know, and I need to know when I'm dealing with people abroad or from other cultures here, you know, that have come here, you know, what is it that makes us all comfortable? What is it that we're looking for in these exchanges? And that's why it's so important that Go Global Fast is becoming, you know, the place that people can find out what to do and what to think and what to ask, right?
Absolutely. And let's even highlight this particular aspect of our conversation. Everything that we have been discussing today led us to the point that we can make a statement. And here is that statement that we're making. If you are an American businessman and you want to do business, let's say, in Gulf countries, collectivist countries, none of your professional credentials will play a role. You cannot say none because America carries a lot of weight as far as education and professional background, so some of it will work, but not nearly enough for you to be able to do business with these people. For example, if the company established a connection with another company in Dubai, and that manager who established the connection left, the contract is automatically over. They will not work. There will be no continuity. Personal relationship is more important than professional relationship. And the personal relationship will overpress everything else. In all emerging markets, almost all emerging markets, in fact, I can safely say in all emerging markets, that rule will be absolutely true. Now, absolutely not understood by American businessmen, and American businessmen need to learn about it. So again, if an American comes, let's say, to Japan, and he only dares to say the word I, Well, let's say when he comes to Russia and he says the word I, that's it. Russians will very quickly tell him, and which is true, I is the last letter in the Russian alphabet. Shut up, pack your suitcases, off you go. They might not even tell you that openly, but they will think it about you because it is prohibitively individualistic. And in Japan, absolutely prohibited, period. That will not work. In Turkey, same thing. If you represent yourself incorrectly and you do not understand that you need to represent yourself as a willing member of the future working clan, that's it. Consider your chances nil because it will not work. So you're absolutely right. Go Global Fast disseminates that kind of knowledge and helps people and businessmen. It helps people in a sense that we just get acquainted as how we are looked at in the world. But it also helps businessmen to how we can advise them or how they can become knowledgeable enough to go abroad and to see how they're viewed from the outside. So both personal and business.
Well, that's amazing. And the other thing that occurs to me just now, you said businessmen, and I'm thinking that businesswomen, you probably got a whole other layer or lane of issues to deal with in terms of getting off on the wrong foot as a woman doing business with other cultures. You know, we have enough trouble sometimes as a woman in America figuring out what to do in the boardroom, you know, to negotiate well and to even ask for things that are due us, if you will, in a way that is productive and appropriate and so forth. So I can see that this is a very interesting conversation to pick up next time in terms of just that, you know, what do you do? Even networking globally has got to be interesting. If you think about your personal recommendation versus professional credentials, and then how does networking work? Can we maybe talk about that next time?
You cannot agree more with you. And I would love to introduce the topic a little bit more and open it for the next time by saying, do you know what the name of an American businesswoman is in the world? It is called
no.
Global Third Gender. And the reason they are called, and there is a reason why they are they're called third gender. Because American businesswomen, let's say Western businesswomen, and especially American businesswomen, are considered, let me rephrase it differently and say, when I first mentioned it to someone, to an American businesswoman, she got scared and she said, so I'm not a woman anymore. I said, on the contrary, everything that did not work for you in America will work with you for you 10, 20, 50, 100 times more in a global setting. In fact, for an American woman entrepreneur, you are highly advised to become globalized before you even become domestic. Maybe if not before, then simultaneously with becoming domestic, because you will do remarkably well. Everything, all the negative part of being a woman are nil or neutralized, or neutralized to a very large degree, but all the positive parts working for you and are amplified to the 10th degree. And let's discuss it next time and explain what makes an American businesswoman be naturally positioned for success in a global setting.
Wow. That's quite telling right there, as far as I'm concerned. Something that I had not really thought very much about is that some of what is problematic here could be the opposite of problematic there, you know, in other countries. I think that's very good news, and I look forward to that conversation, and I hope that you have a great week, and I will talk to you soon on the phone offline here, and I will ask you how you are, and when I say that, I will let you know if I mean it as a placeholder, as a throwaway line, or that I really care enough about you to spend 15 minutes and find out how you are. And you know I'm teasing you, of course.
I do.
I'm going to have to laugh. I'm going to have to laugh, or I'm going to end up falling in a manhole cover somewhere. So.
We cannot allow that to happen.
No, it's been a great conversation. Thank you so much for sharing all of this stuff and for, frankly, for, as they say in America, pumping me for the true sense of, you know, what do I mean when I say how are you, and what do I mean, you know, who do I care about and who do I love? I think that's great. I hope that was of value to anybody that was listening, because it was great.
And
so,
I'm very grateful.
Do you have any final words?
Yes. I wanted to say that I'm so grateful to you that it was such a direct, that you, as Americans say, went out on a limb, right? If we can use an American expression here. So
let's
keep going.
All right. So we'll close this call then show for today, and we will talk about networking and women in business around the world, and all those good things we were just talking about personal versus professional credentials, personal recommendations and professional credentials, and how it all works to our advantage or not, depending on where we're doing business. So goodbye for now, and make it a great week, and go global fast. That's what I say.
Fast. Yes,
take
fast.
Take us out, Pete.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
You've been listening to Go Global Fast with Dr. Tayera Kobayeva and Deborah Brown. Tune in every Monday for another hour of globalization success strategies. Go Global Fast is a production of the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.